Oh, wow. I'm really glad we're doing an episode about me. That's great. Wow. Well, hey, I'm Marmaduke, and I'm finally ready to make my debut in podcast form. Wow. Wow.
Hey, hey, hun, who put the dog in front of the microphone? What?
That's a I thought it was just a big sausage.
I know this is my professional microphone, but no.
Hello, welcome to Nothing New, a remake podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Justin Keyson, and over on his mic is...
Hi, I'm Andrew Lindy. One microphone is now inside of Marmaduke, but
yeah,
you know, that's just the way that it goes when you have a dog that large.
You know, I feel we nailed a Marmaduke scene.
I think so, yeah.
Is exactly what a Marmaduke stripped is. I think we nailed it. I think Brad Anderson will be proud of us. I think creator of Marmaduke. I think my job's done. Thank you for everyone listening to this episode of Nothing New. I'm kidding. We are actually, we have quite a bit of more to talk about today about Marmaduke, believe it or not. And we also have a special guest with us today.
Hello. I'm Cole Garrison. You can find me from Welcome Party podcast. That's still weird to say out loud.
We'll get back to that after the break. But cool, welcome.
Yeah. Hi. I'm happy to be here. When you invited me to be a guest on your guys' show, I was so excited. And then when you said Marmaduke, I went okay. And then I watched it and went, oh, this was revenge for something that I did. I see what this is. I'm being punished for something in the past. I didn't realize. Oops.
Cole, you know what you did.
It was almost like we thought we'll have a little fun. You know, okay, so let's do our usual thing. Right. Today we will be talking about Marmaduke from 2010.
And Marmaduke from 2022.
So, first of all, what the hell, they made a new Marmaduke movie. So that was already, what a strange thing. But we try and cover new movies. Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix, so we're like, great, very accessible. You know, and, it, you know, even if it's a dumb kids movie, hey, it's on a free service or a service that a lot of people have that will cost no additional money. Mm-hmm. And we thought, well, let's just have someone that can have fun with something stupid like that.
Yeah, nope, that's my brand.
And unfortunately, it's turned out way stupider than we could have imagined. But we're just we're gonna, you know, Marmaduke, huh?
Marmaduke. I want to
know though, Cole. Mm-hmm. Do you have any previous knowledge of who Marmaduke is?
So growing up, I used to read I called it the funnies. I don't know if there's a better term for it, but it's the funnies in the papers. I used to read them every day, and then Sunday was like, you know, my bread and butter because it was in color. Mm-hmm. And when you said Marmaduke, I was like, I vaguely remember it, but it was always the one next to like the religious family. I was like, okay, I kind of looked at it, but that wasn't my favorite strip. And I vaguely remember this movie. Like, vaguely remember seeing the trailer, but I didn't know about the nuances that is Marmaduke. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I remember vaguely a cartoon in the 80s and the 90s, maybe. Mm. And like of cartoon animal cartoons I watched, there was Garfield, Heathcliff, and I guess Marmaduke. Ooh. That was on rotation on Nickelodeon. And that's it.
Okay.
That's it. So I can tell you what episode of Garfield. I can tell you episode of Heathcliff. I don't remember what happens in Marmaduke.
Let me tell you, Justin, I did a little additional research. Marmaduke was a section of the Heathcliff show.
Okay.
They would give him one, you know, segment of the 30-minute show.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so I watched one, and Yeah, about on par. Like, it's just...
Oh, my God. So maybe it's not the movie's fault. Maybe that's just the brand of Marmaduke.
The thing is, right, looking at the comics papers, looking at the, you know, what is in print every day and in some places only on Sunday, you know, Marmaduke is a one-panel comic.
Right.
So it's just the one joke. And it's the joke is... dog big. So you can see where they might have had some trouble right away when they were going to make a movie of it.
Can you just imagine the writers being told this is the movie you're making and they're going, I need a paycheck. I need a paycheck. Yeah. I need a paycheck.
I feel that is definitely the case with both films. But let's focus. We'll definitely focus on 2010, but you're not wrong. I need a paycheck. Mm-hmm. I need a paycheck. Because I want to start off with, like, I was wondering who directed Marmaduke 2010? Because I have some questions about some of the choices in that film. And I looked at the name Tom Day and I went, huh, all right, what did this guy do before this movie? And this is always my favorite part about this show. Sometimes we look at someone's filmography and goes, that's a weird connection.
Yeah.
So, the previous film before Marmaduke was Failure to Launch.
What?
Yeah. Matthew McConaughey, Kate Hudson. Before that, Showtime with Robert De Niro and Eddie Murphy. And here's the one that surprised me. Shanghai Noon with Jackie Chan. And wait, what's that? Owen Wilson.
So I'm calling this now without knowing and without any knowledge, and I'm just making assumptions. Mm-hmm. This was a trap movie in the sense that Tom Day or whoever wanted to make a movie in Hollywood signed on for so many productions, so many movies, and this is one of them that they had to make because they wanted to make something else. Mm-hmm. It just because you look at the cast list alone, you're going like, this should be good. Like, if this was like a live action movie, I would be excited to see 90% of these people in this on the same cast.
Yeah. No, there's the voice cast alone is one of those classic cases of like, huh, yeah, these were all people either like on their way up to being super popular or already established, and like all of them are just here, you know, like filling in a couple hours in the voice booth.
Yeah. You know? And then when you look at the live action cast, you go, these are some of the hardest working actors that don't get recognition.
Yeah.
Like they
yeah.
should.
Yeah. Lee Pace, Judy Greer, William H. Macy. These three alone have been in so many projects, movies. I know who that is kind of faces. And then the voice cast is like filled with these names that like, oh, people, you know, Owen Wilson was definitely, I think this was kind of the cool down Owen Wilson period, if I can be honest. But then George Lopez, I did not know Emma Stone was had anything to do with this movie.
Say like when it was Emma Stone and Christopher Mintz-Plasse. I can never say his name correctly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like I'm hearing the voices going like, I know these voices. Yeah. And I had to immediately go to IMDb. The thing that kills me the most about Lee Pace is he's an amazing actor, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And he had to do some projects like this early on because he just wanted to be consistent and be not forgotten.
Right.
And when you know he's such a good actor and you're seeing him in these movies, you're like, he looks like someone who knows this is beneath him. And when he's acting, it comes across that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big Pushing Daisies fan. And I think he's wonderful in that show. And I see him here and it's like he's trying his best to kind of emulate the energy of the character from Pushing Daisies, but also somehow more annoyed, I guess. But then,
yeah,
but yeah, no, I can see him just like, hi, I'm here.
I can't tell you the difference between Lee Pace's portrayal of the dad in this dog movie than the dad from Beethoven. It's like the same dude, just two different actors.
Yeah, he's channeling Charles Grodin here, and I think even Charles had more to work with in Beethoven this movie.
I want to come back to this idea that you said, Justin, that this is a cool down period for Owen Wilson, which sounds right. silly, but I think you hit that nail right on the head. Because this is right after, so he actually, you know, it's kind of funny that he was also the owner, the dad in Marley and Me.
Right.
That was 2 years before this.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like, God. that was the same year as Drill Bit Taylor. And I kind of remember that as like, everyone was like, oh, Owen Wilson, no, we can, you can calm down a little bit. It's okay. And, you know, because then we get into, this is like a big sequel period. Yeah. Night at the Museum 2, mm-hmm. Little Fockers,
yeah.
Cars 2 is the next year. Like,
yeah.
this is, it is a weird cool down period for mm-hmm. Owen Wilson in that year specifically.
Yeah. No, I'm not here to break down Owen Wilson's full career, but. Yeah, you're right, Andrew. Like, right around that, on point. Drill Bit Taylor and Marley and Me was the 1-2 punch of the beginnings of Owen Wilson kind of being super, like super in demand. And then slowly but surely, it's like, oh, I guess I'm picking up paychecks, you know?
Yeah.
Like in Little Fockers, you know? And though I'll even say, like, you know, maybe a one or two missteps, like, here, like, How Do You Know is, like, of the final movie of, like, one of the last movies, like, James L. Brooks directed, and he's, like, he's a very prominent creator, director, with some really great movies in his filmography, but this is not one of them, you know? Like, that was a movie that seemed like it was, like, James L. Brooks is trying to grasp to what people know about him, and it didn't work out for anyone at the end, and also, FYI, the last Jack Nicholson movie he's ever been in. So at this point, you know, it just seems like, short of whenever Wes Anderson has something for him, you know Owen Wilson looked at that paycheck and went, yeah, Marmaduke looks like he's paying a lot, you know. Yeah. I guess I'll do Marmaduke. Yeah. You know,
yeah, because looking at this is when he like, for the cool down period, what you're saying, Justin, mm-hmm. it's like the least big name project.
Yeah.
So like, he probably showed up in sweats and at his house or something.
Yeah. And
all right, let's go.
But yeah, this is a very odd film just for cast alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ignoring the fact that this is an adaptation of a single square. Comic strip, like, every day is just the same joke but a little different.
Was anyone ready for the amount of flatulent humor that's in Marmaduke?
How could anyone be ready for that?
I certainly wasn't.
I wasn't expecting all the poop jokes, but like, it is a kid's movie,
right? Fair. Yeah,
so I was like, okay, there's all that. What I wasn't expecting was them trying to make, like, a teen high school movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about this. The beginning is so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Truly a bizarre situation where Marmaduke is narrating.
Yeah.
It's Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
But he's talking like he is a high school student.
Yeah.
And then we see a very tall high school student.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, you know, in a normal movie, this would be our guy talking about, oh, in high school, I was so awkward and nobody liked me.
Yeah. I was connecting with this dude going, oh, this is going to be someone I have to care about.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, they instantly mess up, because then they're like, oh, he's not popular. He doesn't get picked for sports. I'm sorry. The tallest guy doesn't get picked for a basketball team?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not how that works.
Yeah,
that's
no.
That's not how that works.
No, they're going to want him on that team. Even if he sucks, they're going to want him on that team. Here's the thing, right? That's the joke, air quote. The joke here is supposed to be, hey, we want you to think it's an awkward teen coming-of-age story about this guy. No, it's about the talking Great Dane. And I sat there and went, who was that joke for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who bought a Marmaduke ticket, sat in the theater, and went, "This is the movie I wanted."
Right.
Oh wait, you tricked me! How dare you?
That's a Cole. That's a fantastic point. That doesn't make sense, right?
This
if you're like channel surfing, which is happening less and less these days,
yeah,
like channel surfing, and you go, "Oh, what's this movie?" and you somehow miss the title Marmaduke. And you're seeing this narration movie and you're hearing Owen Wilson and you're like, "Oh, is this like kind of like a weird Wonder Years thing?" And then the camera whip pans to a talking dog. I guess maybe that would have worked, but we don't live in those times anymore. And like you said, I went to go to buy a ticket. If I'm the person who bought a ticket to Marmaduke, I know what fucking movie this is.
let's hit on another point. Talking dog.
Yeah, boy.
Yes.
So they're doing the full, it is a live action dog that they have computer generated a mouth onto.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. And let me point this out. In the comic strip, Marmaduke doesn't talk.
Yeah.
I never understand this choice where it's like famously silent characters begin speaking. Justin, we went through this before with Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry.
That was a weird one.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm a big fan of like Homeward Bound talking. Sure. They're not talking, but they're talking, you know?
Yeah.
The having the mouth on a dog move in perfect unison to Owen Wilson's voice was very trippy.
Yeah.
Because they did it for every animal. And I was like, some worked. Mm-hmm. But since the Great Dane is so big, making that mouth move was like a... I will say this. It made me entranced out of going like, wow, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. It was a choice I think, yeah, the size of his face in terms of the animation, which is... dodgy, to be honest, is so jarring. And I don't, entrance is fair. I could see that going, like, and you like some like yeah I'm sitting there watching it and I'm like, you're doing this for the whole movie, I see.
Oh, this isn't a bit. This isn't like the opening of you tricking me about it's not about a teenager. Is the movie.
This is the whole film. It's every... Oh, and all the animals do this. I see.
There's a whole... Now, yeah, there's a whole animal world going on around the human world.
I will give these animals credit. They're very well trained.
That's a
pretty
positive.
Sure they're... I don't know how much was CGI. I'm pretty sure that dance number at the end was all real. That was the most realistic animation I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I don't know how they got in the dance like in sync. That was impressive.
You know what? I'm still trying to figure out how they pulled that off. But anyway,
I don't know. I'm still sticking with it. Was so surprising watching this movie about this dumb teenager learning a high school thing as a dog. The more I talk about it, the less real it feels.
The thread kind of continues when Marmaduke. So let's skip over some of the plot real quick. But when Marmaduke meets up with the friends, the little friends group that he makes, that includes Emma Stone, they do a little high school for dogs moment.
Yeah.
Where they're like, over there's the purebreds, and over here is the mushroom eaters, and over here's the weird, and we're the mutts, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is very much from a certain era of high school films that were being made where they always had to have like, we're the nerds and over there's the jocks, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Very late 90s, early 2000s.
Very. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that continues on there. And then I don't know. Then they have parties, which is very like a high, you know, the high school party, getting invited to the cool party. I don't know.
I mean, go ahead, Cole. Yeah.
No, see, like, it didn't feel like they were invited. It felt like, stay away from my turf. Yeah. And they're like, hey, let's go party. I was like, I hated relating to the nerd one, but like when the little dog Giuseppe or whatever, the one played by Christopher Mintz.
Yeah.
Like when he's like, "No, we don't want to die." I'm like, "That's a very good point. Dogs bite. You could die going to this. It's not like high school where it's like, man, they're gonna give me a wedgie. This is like, no, these are animals. Yeah, you don't have underpants."
I think because I see what Andrew's saying, but I also it's spotty. This analogy, like, it doesn't really like why is it a high school? Why are you doing high school-y tropes for these animals? Because yeah, cool, they don't have the same worries as us. And yeah. Like, and Andrew, yeah, you're right. It's like, but they have parties. Like this is like that party scene at the house is like you know, the teenager boys like, "Oh, don't have a party, okay," wink to the camera, and it's a house party. That's literally what Marmaduke does in the movie. And
yeah, no, literally, that's a shot for shot comparison.
Yeah, and it's just like, but I'm like, but why are you equating Marmaduke to a teenager? Which again, I God help me, I guess that makes the opening make more sense, but I hate it.
Well, yeah, I just think it's a very loose thread that the film is trying to hold on to.
But why? That doesn't.
No idea why.
Right? Like, why did the writers go, "Let's"? You know what I see? I see Marmaduke as an analogy for teenage rebellion.
It's in more like awkwardness, teenage awkwardness. Not knowing where you fit in, new kid, new school.
Mm-hmm.
The trying to find like a positive thing here. I will say, the nostalgia hit me while watching it because it felt like watching a very terrible kids movie that I grew up watching, where it's like the jokes are very obvious. They're not even trying to be clever with the jokes. It's, "Oh, that dog's gonna pee in the water. Oh, he's gonna drink it."
Yeah.
Like, it's very obvious. And for me, watching it, I was like, okay, this is bringing back some nostalgia with the music, the era. But that's all this film had. I don't know. I can't tell. The nostalgia thing doesn't work in the year the movie came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
do want to. Okay, I want to say I have very few positive things to say about this movie, but here's one of them.
Okay.
The family dynamic in regards to Marmaduke is funny. I love the idea that the mom, the kids, they know that he's trouble. They pick up their drinks when he goes under the table.
That's kind of funny.
You know, that and that Phil, the dad, is the one who has the most trouble with him. That is a good dynamic. Mm-hmm. That is and that's the core of the comic strip.
Yeah.
well, they also I was trying really hard to find positive here, but to build on that, it felt like the message of the movie was dads, listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dad was unwilling to learn and adjust. He was like, "You gotta do things my way," which is why he was having trouble with Marmaduke being with just his dogness, and his son who doesn't want to play soccer, the daughter who's like missing her friends. Like, he's not listening, which is what I thought, like, oh, this is what this movie's about. The whole high school dog thing, I keep coming back to that. That was weird. But like, the dad, that's what it felt like this movie was, which is essentially a terrible version of Beethoven.
Which was also repeated, Andrew, in Cheaper by the Dozen with Steve Martin.
And very specifically, the moving aspect.
Oh,
The family has to move so that everyone's mad at the dad. Like, that is just like a big part of these movies.
Yeah. It's really weird. Like, as I'm watching this movie, and I went, I just saw a lot of these plot points already happen in Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yeah.
That's really annoying.
As a kid, it's you're not wrong. They're all used tropes. They're all used story bits. But I mean, as a kid, you know, like, sometimes, like, the movies are all the same. Like, we're gonna teach you a lesson on how to grow up. And you're just like, yeah, cool, whatever. Give me the punch in the balls, the fart jokes. Where's the principal that sucks that we're gonna make fun of right now? Where's this principal?
Right. We're due for a meeting of the principal. Show up. And it's like, yeah, and here's the thing. Like, tropes are tropes, fine, you know. But it does, like, yeah, I'll give them the fact that, like, all right, fine, I guess that's a story. And yeah, funny enough, like, yeah, if you want to pull anything posy about this movie, is, well, all right, the family dynamic is a decent idea, and that mostly works. But man, oh man, is it really also not about the family? It is about Marmaduke trying to get on a date with that one Lassie-looking dog. You know?
Yeah. There's one other positive about it.
Uh-huh.
If you watch the new one before this, this movie looks like The Godfather.
I'll tell you, I watched him in the other order, and I thought I was going to die. So when we get to that second half,
Oh my god!
I don't know. What the second. Let's live here for as long as we can.
Yeah. I don't want to. The shape trip. Oh my god! But anyway, so like, the thing that's super sad about this movie is I wanted to see more about the Chupadagra.
Oh, yeah.
Because Sam Elliott was a perfect cast for this dog that never comes back and beats the snot out of the alpha dog.
Voiced by Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah!
What a bizarre... That one's the most bizarre casting, I think, out of this whole movie.
I'm still processing my feelings on Kiefer Sutherland as Bosco.
I think Kiefer Sutherland's also processing his feelings being cast this movie.
Was I in that movie?
Yes. I was drunk a lot in the early 2010s, but dear God.
He's like, was I not filming a 24? No, Kiefer, you were not filming a 24.
I feel like it's extremely, extremely plausible that a number of people that are in this movie, voice acting in this movie, have no idea that they were in this movie. Because, first of all, I could see it being, this was, for a lot of them, I think they could have recorded their voice in a day.
Yep.
Owen Wilson as Marmaduke is really, he has the most lines, and then maybe Emma Stone. Maybe. The rest of them are kind of like one-liners that they probably could have recorded in 8 hours and just got done as quickly as possible.
Here's my question for you two.
Yeah. Huh.
What the flying monkey balls was William H. Macy doing in this movie?
I think he was having fun.
Like, this is a fun project. He's an award-winning actor.
Yeah.
He must have won something, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, you know, you just need that paycheck. And he's like, well, I guess I'm going to do Marmaduke. You know?
Did he have a kid around that time? That's sometimes that happens to an actor.
They have
a kid and they're like, well, I've only been in dramas. I want something that my kid can see.
Okay.
That's true. That's a regular thing. Like someone going, oh, I kind of want to do a project that my kid can watch. And like, I don't know other, like, William H. Macy doesn't have a ton of like kid safe movies that he's in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe.
Yes. He had two. I'm just going right from Wikipedia. So no research here, but two daughters who were born in 2000 and 2002. So they would be right at that age of, like, remembering a movie that their dad's in. So that makes sense to me.
Right. Oh, yeah. If you look at a lot of his, like, kind of stuff he was doing back then, like, the year before, he did the Robert Rodriguez kids film Shorts.
Right.
So he was getting...
He was a voice in 2008, a voice in Tale of Despero. That's some animated nonsense.
I'm shocked he wasn't one of the dogs in this case. But no, he's like, I need to be in front of the camera for this one.
I don't know. I feel like he's done... I'm looking at his list. He's got some animated, some voice stuff throughout his career. So maybe it's just... But this was in front of the... Like you're saying, huh? Yeah, that is kind of an odd choice.
Yeah, because, like, this isn't just a kid's movie. This is, like, Disney Channel original movie, kid's movie.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. That's, like, shots fired right there.
Yeah.
Okay,
This was on the same level to me as Kangaroo Jack.
Yes.
Oh, I think Kangaroo Jack is better.
No. I'm not saying Kangaroo Jack and this movie are like the same. One's better than the other. That's a different conversation.
Are you saying they're not on the same pedigree?
Terrible.
I had to do it.
Watching this movie with the way the animation is and the jokes that's being told and the way they are filming it, it felt to me like watching Kangaroo Jack.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Let me. Okay, so I want to say a joke that made me laugh much harder than I thought it would.
Okay.
That's in this movie.
Okay.
I don't know why. I think because I was just so joke starved, like just the right way.
Uh-huh.
There's a scene where all of a sudden we start caring about the kids in the family,
mm-hmm.
and the daughter is at school and she's trying to like make new friends or something, and all the other girls at school have chihuahuas in purses. Which is the Paris Hilton thing, right?
Yeah.
And so then, because we're in a Marmaduke movie where dogs talk, the camera zooms in on each one, and they kind of take offense at being called accessories. And one of them says, "In my country, I was a lawyer."
I knew that was coming.
That's in any other movie. I think that it would at least make sense. It makes no sense here.
Right?
No, dog it comes lawyers. Out of nowhere.
What?
I don't know. I don't know.
It just really hit me. It still tickles me because I also love chihuahuas. So the idea of a chihuahua lawyer is just a funny image in my head. But for this movie to try and make this joke, it doesn't make any sense because it's not like we don't see that the dogs have an underground society where they're going to law school. Like, it's just they're dogs.
Do you also realize that this is also because George Lopez plays the role of Carlos, the cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I realized, like, oh, this isn't George's first talking animal movie.
He was in that
Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Yeah, right.
I also I made this a tweet yesterday, and I want to kind of just reiterate it here. My tweet goes, I would like to put in a formal request to ban the use of this song for any future movies, TV shows, or commercials. And that's the romantics, What I Like About You. When that song plays at the end and in that amazingly realistic dance sequence of all the dogs dancing, but when that song played, I went, that's it, I can't do this anymore. We're gonna have to put a stop on this song. Don't ever use it again. I don't feel good hearing it anymore. I actually get mad when I start hearing dung dung dung. No, I get frustrated. Now what you do now is cause anger. This song, I'm not against the romantics. I hope they're fine, but I need that song to never exist in future movies or TVs or commercials. No more. Don't celebrate your spas, your resorts. Don't make this a bit for a montage, for comedy, family bonding time. No, it's done.
It's interesting. I think it was in a clothing store commercial. I think maybe around this time or a few years after this, it was either. It was like Old Navy or Gap. They definitely used
sounds about
this.
Right. Yeah. No. No yeah, more. Yeah. I want it to end. Find another song. You know.
It's like hearing the California song California. You're like, oh my god.
Whenever somebody enters, like in this movie, they go to Orange County.
Yeah.
And the California and the Phantom Planet song plays. Yeah.
I thought it was a little like funny in a stupid way that Marmaduke was like, we're moving to the OC. All I know about that is the TV show.
Cut to
I was like, that's stupid. It made me chuckle a little only because of how stupid it was. I mean, that's in that same way where anytime that any comedy movie or even sometimes a serious movie, they go to London, they start playing London Calling.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well,
when the skater kids started talking "quote unquote" Californian, I literally rolled my eyes so hard. Yeah. Do you remember that part?
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't want that to happen again.
Can we talk? Okay, so a big part in this movie is there's a surf contest for dogs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cute. I thought the surfing aspect, because they brought it up where the big top alpha dog is like, I'm a surf champ. What are you good at? I went, oh, we're having a surf competition. I'm calling it now because this isn't exactly trying to trick me here. And like when they both had to surf, I was like, this felt like Scooby-Doo in a positive way, where he's on the surfboard and he's succeeding not on purpose. He's holding on for dear life, and it just happened to be he ends up being perfect. If anything, Owen Wilson talking over it kind of was more of a hindrance.
Yeah, weirdly enough.
Because I'm like, just he's screaming, he's freaked out, he's holding on. This is selling it. I don't need Owen Wilson saying like, okay, dog up, let's do this. I'm like, no.
Yeah, when he says less is more. Cowabarka.
Yeah.
Oh, I that's when I went to go get a snack. That's like when he said cowabarka, I went, I'm going to get something to drink. I'm just going to get like, I think I have some Cinnamon Toast Crunch over here. You know?
Yeah. The thing that this is where the movie messes up is the villain then attacks Marmaduke for winning the competition. And Marmaduke gets blamed for running away from the dog. And I went like, how is no one seeing what we're seeing here? What is happening? Why is Marmaduke getting blamed when it's very obvious the villain dog is chasing Marmaduke?
Yeah. It's a fantastic question. And
it doesn't matter, right? Because
right.
There's a lot that I can't make sense. Marmaduke runs away. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's this, the movie turns into like a drama where you would expect like this to be the beginning of an action movie because there's like a sinkhole that tries to that eats up Marmaduke.
What happens?
I literally blinked and then all of a sudden I felt like, what happened to this movie right now?
Why are this isn't just a sinkhole. This is War of the Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I guess didn't come out, which came out like a couple years before. So weird. I really want this really like War of the Worlds Spielberg vibe. Said Tom Day, circa 2000. I don't know, but
it gets really dramatic, and then they end up just going down the pipe, and then they get rescued, and they do right. Do they do a fake out where Marmaduke's dead, but he's really alive? That's how they always do it, right?
Well,
I mean, they don't sit long enough for you to think that.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind, this is a movie where the dogs are pretending to talk with animation. They're dancing, there's high school dogs, and you have this dad who's failing upward. So, like, there's a lot of disbelief already happening. But if you expect me to think you have a raging river of clean water underneath in a sewer system, that's where I went, like, what is... Like, if anything, Marmaduke should have been covered in poo.
Yeah.
And that's the... Because they're already doing fart jokes. There's the easy one. Like, how much do you love your dog there, dad? Hug your dog, dad. And you're like, no, don't. He's covered. No.
But yeah, they make it out.
Yeah, it's fine.
I've written down this, but is it the surfing? Something that Marmaduke does goes viral, and they get 682,000 hits. That's the specific number they say.
What's the video? It was something they posted.
It's the surfing, or
I think it's
the rescue.
Rescue. The kids recorded it and put it on YouTube. You know that platform, YouTube.
that these kids can do very easily
in 2010. Well, I don't know if you heard this, but it got viral.
Oh, man. That's back in the day when Hollywood still didn't know what viral meant, and they were trying so hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we also have not really explicitly said, so Phil, the father of this family, is some kind of a dog food marketing genius.
Yeah.
And that's why he's hired by this California company that William H. Macy runs, and they're trying to get Petco as a client. And Petco is said very explicitly, and there's two people there who represent Petco. And I'm like, okay, so Petco paid for some of this movie.
I don't think they paid for some of it. I think they paid for a lot of it.
I bet you if I went to a Petco during the time of this film, I would be seeing a lot of Marmaduke ads all over that Petco.
I completely agree.
They kept mentioning it a lot. Yeah, and guess what? They got the deal. I don't know, spoil the ending of that movie.
Did they really? Right. What?
What? I'm going to see.
No, I was laughing when he got fired on speakerphone in front of his kids.
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh, he wasn't being a bad dad of having to go into work instead of helping us find Marmaduke. He really was about to get, uh-oh.
I see that at Petco Park, I'm just curious, I went, what Petco ads were for Marmaduke? And apparently, Marmaduke threw out the first pitch at Petco Park.
Oh, I'm sorry, you have to say that one more time.
The dog, Marmaduke threw the first pitch at Petco Park.
Like the live-action dog.
A Great Dane threw a pitch at a Padres game at Petco Park.
I will say this for the advertising. That's creative.
With like a giant, like the electronic billboard saying Marmaduke in theaters June 4th.
yeah.
Cole, I want to go back to what you had just said. When Phil is fired over speakerphone mm-hmm. in front of his family, that, let me tell you, I didn't expect that to happen at all, because this whole movie made such a big deal about how William H. Macy loves his dog and dogs in general, and that if you want to work for him, you also have to love your dog more than anyone else in your life. So yep. when he's on the phone and he's like, I'm not going to make it to the pitch, Marmaduke is lost, I thought William H. Macy was going to be like, here's my helicopter, let's go fire
yeah,
him.
And then absolutely. Instantly
he's like, well, don't worry about it, you're fired. I was like, this character now makes zero sense.
yeah.
There's no way that I can even understand what's going on in this movie.
William H. Macy's character does a flip during the surf competition, because when he says, get your dog under control, if anything, what he should have done was he should have been the one to see the villain dog attack Marmaduke and be like, whoa, like he's about to defend Marmaduke. And then the dad goes, you're such a bad dog. I can't believe you're such a bad dog. I should never have had you. We're getting rid of you tomorrow. Like, he should have yelled. And that's when William H. Macy goes, ah, this is the kind of person you are.
Mm-hmm.
That makes more sense, honestly.
Yeah, but nope. Can't have the dad.
There's also, okay, there's one other thing that bothered me when it happened in the movie. They make this big old thing that Phil has to go on a boat trip or something with William H. Macy.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I have to spend time with my family. And he's like, well, bring the family along. And so he doesn't tell his family that it's a work trip. And then they also can't bring their dogs. So I was thinking, Marmaduke's going to sneak on that boat.
Yep.
I don't know how. Marmaduke's going to sneak on that boat. And then here's how the movie went. We're going on this trip. Okay, we're back now.
Yeah.
There's
we
a
never
scene,
see the boat.
There's this. It's like all of a sudden, like, I bet you there was a draft where we saw the events of the trip.
Yeah.
Like, okay, maybe Marmaduke stayed and had his fucking kegger. Fine. But what if, like, we cut to the family and then all of a sudden we see Phil and William H. Macy, like, typing up away and something and working on the presentation, and then Judy Greer gets mad. That's probably in a draft somewhere. But you're right.
It has to be.
Yeah, it has to be. And it's so weird that the movie just went, that we saw the beginning of the trip, cut to end of trip. Also, where's that person who's supposed to be watching Marmaduke? Like, they said a name of some. Oh, so-and-so's going to watch it. And when you'd think, I don't know, one day in, to check on Marmaduke, they would come in and go, all right, Marmaduke, see how you, what? No. No,
$10, I'm willing to put that the script had a bigger emphasis, the original script before Hollywood editing occurs. Like, the original script probably had a bigger family dynamic of the dad is a workaholic, the mom is keeping the family together, and the kids are just not who the dad thinks the kids are. And on this trip that you guys talk about that we don't see, it probably emphasizes it so much more. But when they started editing and cutting it, they're like, it's the dog who farts and throws a party. We don't need this family dynamic. No one wants to see this in this Marmaduke movie.
It's fair. No. We need more Marmaduke. The movie's called Marmaduke. We need more Marmaduke, said some executive at Fox.
I will say this, and this isn't a joke I was dreading, and especially because it's 2010, it's an easy joke. I am so grateful that A, we didn't have two female dogs flash Marmaduke.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
And we didn't have the pothead scene. We were close.
We had the with mushrooms.
Them, like, on yeah, we had the mushrooms.
Yeah.
But we didn't have, like, they open a door and it's just a lot of fog. And it's a stereotypical type of community in their smoking. Like, I'm very grateful that those two easy jokes weren't in this movie.
I bet you, like, someone wanted, because, you know, isn't Scooby-Doo a Great Dane as well?
Yeah. Yes.
So, like, I bet you someone considered, oh, wouldn't be funny if we did, like, a Scooby-Doo joke. And maybe, as Cole's saying, that's the illusion joke. It's like there's another Great Dane that comes out of, like, the van that looks green and very suspiciously like another van. Yeah. And he's like, there is,
it is the, I think a Marmaduke issue is the Scooby-Doo problem. Is that, you know, you're towing the line when you start having Marmaduke talk. So it's already, you know, you can't make any allusion to it.
I gotta,
you have to pretend that Scooby-Doo doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's just, when you look at Marmaduke and Scooby-Doo, they are two opposite sides of the same problem in terms of live-action movies, right? And it's like, well, we have two Great Dane dog. We have two Great Danes who talk, or at least they're going to talk in our movie. Again, I'm glad you reminded, Andrew, that in Marmaduke's own strip, he doesn't talk.
No.
He's, you know, he's an obstacle in the Winslow family's life. Or just a big thing in the Winslow family's life.
If anything, it is a member of the Winslow family is reacting verbally to something that Marmaduke is going to do or seems to want to do.
Right.
But it's never like he is saying to them, I want that ham. He's just eyeing a ham. And they're like, not today, mister.
Yeah. Or, hey, honey, maybe we should go takeout tonight with Marmaduke having the ham in his mouth. Yeah. That's a Marmaduke joke. See, I'm nailing this. I should write Marmaduke. Pay me to write Marmaduke.
I don't even know if it's still technically going.
I'll revise it. If you just like, I'll go by Justin Anderson. I don't care. That's easy money. I'll do it.
Justin Q. Anderson.
Justin Q. Anderson. But yeah, like if you look at the two ways to do Marmaduke as this talking dog, you have the all CGI choice of Scooby-Doo. And he's, I guess, fine in comparison to Marmaduke, who's a real dog with the movie, with the very loosely CGI'd mouth. And I'm like, I don't know, like what's the better of the two? I guess Scooby-Doo, but I'm still not feeling Scooby-Doo 100%. You know what I mean?
So Scooby-Doo, okay, so in my opinion, the Scooby-Doo movies are vastly superior to what we just saw.
I'm not arguing with that. Yes, I agree.
But in terms of CGI or real dog, I think for 2010, real dog is better because the actors have something to respond to. Whereas back then, it was just a tennis ball.
Fair.
Like today's day, it would be some dude in a bubble suit pretending to be a dog, and it's a different situation.
Right.
But back then, I still don't know how the Scooby-Doo cast, how anyone in any movie reacted to a green screen room or a tennis ball with any kind of emotion. Like, that is part of the craft that I am always in awe over.
Look, I'll say it. Matthew Lillard is shockingly great as Shaggy, and his partner is what you're saying, a green ball.
Yeah.
And you know what? Matthew Lillard is an amazing Shaggy in those movies, and he does a great job talking to the non-existent Scooby-Doo. So maybe Academy Award? I don't know. That's a hot take.
That is a hot take, and you should totally put that on TikTok because I think you get a lot of support.
All right. How can we wrap up our Marmaduke 2010 discussion? Where are we?
It's bad.
No.
Don't seek it out. No one should
do
this.
Oh,
please.
I'm trying not to talk over. That's me currently. Over, like, if you're hearing gasping, it's me. Like, oh, nope. Waiting.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
It's not a. It's a bad movie, But for a kid's movie, if you were like five and under, it's cute. It's a stupid kid's cute movie where it's a babysitter. This movie is 100% an hour and a half babysitter. Keep the kids occupied for whatever period as you, if you need to rest or do something. That is the level of depth of this movie.
That is, that's fair. And, but I am not a five-year-old who needs to be babysat. No. I am a 38-year-old man.
I love the voice crack again.
Who I think this is probably one of the worst movies I had to sit through in the last decade, personally. Or this is the one I got the most mad at while
sitting.
So
you would think if they went to remake it, they could only go up.
Well, after this break, you shall hear us talk about if that's what happened after this break.
Hi, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Diet Coke. And we have a new podcast that we would love for you to listen to.
It's called The 10 in 10 in 10. And it's all about the 2007 film, The 10.
Yeah, it's directed by David Wayne. I liked it when I saw it in 2007. Andrew didn't.
And I didn't.
Is that still true? We don't know. Ten, but we got 10 minutes five, each episode, and eight, we got 30 seconds for this seven, promo, and it's coming up six, on the end. So go five, listen, January 10th.
Four, three.
Thank
two,
you.
One. Goodbye.
You know, before we have to watch a large dog, or at least hear about a large dog causing havoc for a nice little family, let's shift gears. Let's remind everyone that we have a Patreon, patreon.com/nothingnew, where every month when we do a regular episode, we also record a Patreon episode. And sometimes that episode has something to do with the main episode. Perhaps there's another version of the film, a sequel, something related in some way. And sometimes it doesn't. And perhaps to the relief of everyone listening, our Patreon episode this month will not have anything directly related to Marmaduke. It will be in a similar vein. And if you don't understand what I mean, I'll give you a little sample of it right here. I would like to see There is a funny, we mentioned it in the episode, Genndy Tartakovsky, who did the Hotel Transylvania series, except for the most recent one, has been working on a new Popeye.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that, because his animation style plus the Popeye story would be so good.
Right, right.
So I think for that reason, I'm going to have to take that off the table. I can't imagine us coming up with a more fun pitch than whatever they're going to do.
Right.
Blondie is so interesting because it's such a basic idea. And I'm just not familiar at all with Prince Valiant. I don't want that to be
spoiler, I am, for one, I'm glad to not watch another iteration of Marmaduke for our Patreon episode. So, before we go on to continuing talking about this Great Dane, Cole, buddy, why don't you tell the audience what show you're currently involved in and where they can find you on your social medias?
Oh, very, very well. I would very much like to, especially since probably going to be the last positive thing I say on this podcast. So you can find me anywhere looking up Rogue Jedi TTV. I am a Twitch streamer, TikToker, and fellow podcast person. The show I'm on is called Welcome Party. It's part of the Perception Studio family that you can find us live on Twitch. And the podcast just started up again. I used to be part of a show called In Quest of Geek and then other iterations, but the latest one was In Quest of Geek. And we had to stop because of the whole pandemic that happened. And recently we all got back together and we're now back doing Welcome Party, where we are welcoming you to this great party that is being a geek, whether it's Star Wars, Marvel, DC, anime, it doesn't matter. Every week we talk about something new and we're introducing you to this episode. Like, we're getting ready to do Moon Knight on this Monday, but if this episode's coming out on Tuesday, then I have to look at my calendar to see what we're doing next. But we're going to be talking about the first 3 hours of Moon Knight to get everyone, you know, introduce them and all that stuff. And then on TikTok and Twitch, I basically just am having so much fun talking about everything that I love in a more goofy aspect. TikTok is definitely just, you know, having fun talking about the latest theories and spoilery stuff in the world of geek. And then Twitch, I'm just playing some variety of video gaming where everyone is welcome. And it is just a bunch of, I keep saying this and I keep sticking with it, a bunch of goofball energy of just having fun, playing video games and then just talking about fandom stuff. So yeah, you can find me Rogue Jedi TTV on every social media.
Excellent. And once, you know, hey, you know, like, we've had JPG on the show, we've had Alex on the show, so we have actually, we have finished the Welcome Party trifecta with you on the show.
Oh! So. Wow. Okay, saving the best for last, perfect.
With probably one of the worst remakes we had to sit through, so, you know.
Which is also on brand.
Which is, that's the balancer,
Yeah.
So I'm glad.
Go ahead,
what?
I would say I cannot imagine Alex watching Marmaduke.
Oh, I can't. There's a part of me that wants to see in the multiverse what happens if we gave this to JPG.
Oh my god.
I think we, if you look at each one, I think we really did it perfect. Yeah. We gave Alex a very like artsy, based on a book. Very like high end.
Yeah.
Then we hit JPG with some heist and some video game nonsense. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know?
Now he must have loved that one because JPG loves heist.
Oh yeah.
Anything.
Exactly. And then we have now here we are, us three sitting here talking about a big old goofy dog.
Yep.
All right. Well, I guess let's just jump straight to it.
Do we have to?
We can wait. We gotta wrap it up.
So,
okay.
This movie is fully animated.
Mm-hmm.
There's no live action elements. Mm-hmm. But it's also, as I wrote down immediately in my notes, this is unpleasant to look at.
Yeah. This, I had to double check what year this came out, and I was convinced I was watching the wrong movie. Because there's cheap animation, and then there's whatever garbage this is. The Pixar shorts from, like, the early 1990s that were in rough cut are better edited and better put together than whatever this 2022 version of a movie.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. This is painful to look at, and that's me being nice about it. And I looked a little bit into the history of this film. So, it was production started in 2018. One of the, and I think if I'm not mistaken on the Wikipedia page, because in the film it's stated one director, but in Wikipedia they're claiming to have 4 directors. But one of those directors, again, my favorite game is what did that director do before this? So.
This one's the most shocking.
Oh yeah. Oh, if you thought, okay, I want to be clear something. I didn't get a chance to say this for 2010. Shanghai Noon is a delight of a movie for me. Like, good. That's like top tier Jackie Chan in America for me is Shanghai Noon. You know, I love that movie for what it is, and so I was kind of bummed to see that guy direct what we saw. You know, in 2010. But this one is wild. So the director, first director, and the one who really started this project going, is a dude by the name of Mark A.Z. DePay. Visual effects artist. He's been doing this for a long, long time. And this film was set up to be one of the first big projects for his animation company that he was starting out. So, you know, when you look at his previous work, you know, you see some like, oh, okay, like some Garfield animated movies. Well, that sounds about right. Like that makes sense. He did Halloween Town High. Okay.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Not like one of the great Halloween Town movies, but whatever, fine. And then you look at his first feature-length movie, and it is Spawn in 1990s. Yeah. The adaptation of the Todd McFarlane movie, the comic book, Spawn. The only comic based off of it, the first of the Image comic stuff to become into a live-action format of any kind, you know, well before Walking Dead, obviously. But yeah, Todd McFarlane's Spawn was directed by the guy who made this movie.
The one positive thing, and the only positive thing you can say about this, is for his animation studio, there's random moments when it felt like they spent so much time putting individual hairs on the dog, where you're like, this looks like how a dog would look with the hair. There'll be random moments where the grass is super realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, they emphasize so much on the most random stuff. It almost felt like only one person was qualified to be working on this job, but he was surrounded by a bunch of amateurs. So his work or her work or their work was so painfully obvious that watching the rest of it just adds to the it's unpleasant to look at, because you'll see hair. You're like, oh, that's realistic. Unfortunately, it's on a triangle.
I don't want to stick around here too long with who made, like, with all the uncredited stuff here, but there's one credit that when I'm watching the film, I was like, that name looks familiar. That can't be that person. And this is where it's my weird interest. So one of the credits is an executive producer by the name of Louis Ku Tin Lok. Okay. Cause this film apparently had a multiple production houses in Shanghai and South Korea. So, as well as Hollywood. So a bunch of people were working on this movie. Mm-hmm. And but I'm like, I saw Louis Ku Tin Lok. I went, I can't be right. And I'm a big fan of Hong Kong movies. Louis Ku is, in fact, probably one of the biggest stars in Hong Kong.
Oh!
Like, a huge, massive star. He hasn't gotten a chance to cross over here yet, but, like, he's done some pretty great movies that I'm a massive fan of as an actor. And I am mm-hmm. sitting here going, what, why do you have your name on this? It's really weird. It's like finding out that Brad Pitt was like the producer of like, not Ratatouille, but like a knockoff Ratatouille.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, Ratatouille.
Ratatouille.
The one that went the straight to DVD thing that you only find in Walmart bins.
Yeah. It's like finding that out, and you're like, that's a why?
I feel like there's almost that weird, very tenuous connection to that live action Garfield where Bill Murray only signed on because he thought it was one of the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Working on it. Yep. And it was Cohen, not Cohen.
And every time I hear that story, I'm like 50% not sure if it's true, but 50% believing that it's true. So, now here's the thing: I would love a Bill Murray to be the main voice of this thing. I would have. Maybe part of me wishes they shelled out the cash and just got Owen again, but no, that's not what we got. That's not what we got. No.
So here's the thing. So Pete Davidson, the voice of Marmaduke, who Justin's alluding to here.
Yep.
The thing that makes him worth watching is his facial reactions to things. His voice is not what draws me. It's the way he will make a look and his eyes will go wide, or he'll look off to the side, or he'll be holding back laughter, Jimmy Fallon style.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he does.
Yeah.
So him talking as Marmaduke, I was like, dude, you need to get voice acting lessons because this is such, like, were you high? Like, I know that's like a joke because he's always high and stuff, but like, seriously, were you high? Like,
yeah, this,
this is kind of a joke, but I also kind of would believe it if someone told it to me or if it was written on the internet somewhere, because I almost want to believe that maybe just they recorded Pete Davidson talking for 2 hours and just wrote a script around it.
That makes more sense.
he's just kind of like saying things. Like it's not even like there's no emphasis on anything that he's saying. Yeah. He's just kind of talking.
And here's the Andrew, like you just brought up earlier, the strips, the Marmaduke doesn't say anything. So Marmaduke talking here is them going off of the 2010 film.
Yeah.
And so like Owen Wilson.
Wrong source material.
So here, yeah, like they went and decided to get someone who was kind of up and coming and a big up and coming actor, and that's Davidson. But also just he's insanely wrong for the part.
Yeah, just, like there's nothing screams relatable character. There's nothing to relate to Pete Davidson's voice of Marmaduke. You're, like, you're not relating to this character. Like, Owen Wilson's voice just makes you kind of feel bad for whatever happens to Marmaduke. Whereas Pete Davidson, you're just like, okay. Like, this is more white noise than anything.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, no, it's... I guess having Owen's, like, inherent Owen Wilson-ness... just decide the characterization of Marmaduke, fine. Mm-hmm. But Pete Davidson is like you said, he's mostly great for facial reactions, and then when he talks, it's like a weird, like, millennial stoner BS. And
yeah,
that's not who I think of when I think of Marmaduke. And the answer is, like, what is Marmaduke as a character? What, like, you know, like, Garfield, lazy, got it. You know, he'd rather sleep in all day and eat food. Understand that. So a Bill Murray, quite a tired guy who doesn't want to do anything. Sure. But judging off of the one movie where he talks a hell of a lot. And hey, Andrew, can you answer this question for me? In the cartoon, does he talk?
You know, I only watched the one segment, but not a word escaped his lips.
So
it was some kind of bark, growly, grumbly noises in that vague, you know, not talking way.
So, no one knows the character of Marmaduke. The answer is, what's Marmaduke as a character? He's a dog who doesn't understand his bigness.
Right.
So, where does stoner millennial Pete Davidson fall in to that characterization?
Because, like, I would think Jason Segel would be a way better voice choice for him.
Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah. That's actually a really good... No, that would have worked. Yeah.
But especially if they played into the too bigness and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. Like that?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. No, actually, yeah. No, yeah, that's actually correct. That's actually... Yeah, you're right. That's the attitude Marmaduke makes more sense for, but Pete Davidson is... That's, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And again,
they kind of make it like he's like kind of like playful or young, but that doesn't really come across in any way except the voice.
Yeah.
This whole movie just screams cheap and no effort at all. And I apologize to anyone who worked on this and then lost sleep and then all the stuff that goes behind the scenes. I apologize to them. But this movie, pissed me off because it was misleading. It was trending on Netflix when I pushed play. It was in the top 10.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, a lot of people are watching this. This might be something different. And then it starts and you're just seeing how it is. And it just, I don't know how you guys feel about Netflix as a whole right now.
Uh-huh.
But this movie feels like Netflix in the sense that they want to be a studio so bad, but they're trying to make money more than actually do good content.
Uh-huh.
And it is, now that they raised it to almost like $20 a month, I have never been angrier.
Netflix is definitely, that's a whole, I almost feel like it's a separate podcast show together. But I would say, to add what you're asking us about that, I feel like Netflix is an air quote, content farm that if good stuff comes out of it, we're lucky, but if not, it sort of dies in the sea of projects that they've been releasing. And and like this
they,
is one
they
of
kind
them.
Of it seems like they want stuff that's like a little memeable.
Yeah,
like it's a little, you know, you can make GIFs out of it. You can make kind of like you said, a content farm. Like it's just very much you know, and they've been skewing young. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of their original films that are only on Netflix are teen dramas, teen romances.
Yeah.
But I think the other element that is upsetting about specifically this film is that Netflix had some big, when they lost, quote unquote, lost a lot of subscribers. They said, oh, we're pulling funding from all these animated projects. Mm. And it's like, okay, but then you put this on your platform.
Yeah.
Which this is like anti-animation, I almost want to call it. Like, it is just so, it feels like there's no thought put into it, but it's probably only because so much thought was put into it. And it's like the wrong thoughts. I don't know.
Well, this felt like a college project. Like, hey, I'm trying to graduate and I'm working really hard and this is what I put together. Like, that would, I would swallow this so much better. But when you're telling me you got a Hollywood produced, Hollywood produced this movie, and it's 2022, an era in which we are having things be so realistic that you have to like question, like, wait, was that real or was that live? Was that CGI? Like where, what was fake in this? And you watch this, you're going like, this is like the Sonic the Hedgehog trailer one level of bad.
Yeah. No, that's the thing with this one, right? Is that like, it's like trying, it's the, like with the animation, it's very like bare minimum viewable, you know what I mean? And with the writing, it, oh man, if you thought I had an issue with the flatulent humor in the first movie, that ain't nothing compared to the big set piece they put in this one that's all about Marmaduke's massive fart.
The weird thing is, it's more than a fart. They make it pretty explicit that he has to take a massive shit.
Yeah.
In the trophy.
Yeah.
It's beyond, but then the stink of it like annihilates a city block. Like, it is the most, like, it's like, what was anyone thinking making that?
It's so funny because I'm realizing one of the people who's voicing a character on this is an actress named Shelby Young. She plays Chantrell, the French poodle who Marmaduke has a thing for. Like, I realized, like, oh, I follow her on TikTok. Like, she's a funny voice actress who has a pretty good account on TikTok. And then I was like, well, you have not mentioned this movie whatsoever.
There's a reason.
Yeah, there's a reason. There's a reason. And she's like, she's been in like Star Wars, been Rebels, and like, you know, what's that? A Bad Batch. She's been promoting those things, and she's not even a main character in that. But here, I'm like, wait a minute, but aren't you a main character? Nope.
This movie, like, I kid you not, just to go off with, like, just Pete Davidson talking in a room, they probably don't even know they made this movie. It was like, hey, if you show up and you just read these lines, we're not going to tell you the movie, but if you just read these lines, we'll give you this much money.
Yeah.
And that, because there's no emotion between any of the people. The whole guy aspect, I was like, oh, he's the villain of the movie. This is going to be the fun, like, oh, you can't train Marmaduke. And then it turns into some weird kind of racist Miyagi bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to, Cole, you did a good job bringing that in, because I wouldn't even know how to begin with that character. That is truly a bizarre element where it seems like a big part of this movie is about Marmaduke being trained by the world's best dog trainer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the whole plot.
No.
And it's also not even the plot that the movie cares about all the time.
No.
I kind of wonder if, you know, this was not originally a movie.
Oh, if it was a series.
Maybe this was a show that they took the scripts and put them in order that made sense as a movie, because it is kind of episodic.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, we kind of come in and out of different things, but also I'm like, am I giving this way more credit than it deserves? Yeah, I definitely am. It's it just kind of, it meanders and not in a fun way.
No, the only, I'm sorry.
And characters come and go, and some characters aren't introduced until halfway through the movie. Yeah. that are supposed to kind of matter. I don't know. It's unpleasant to think about.
The only time my ears didn't feel like they were being attacked and I didn't want to like scream at the animation was when J.K. Simmons' character Zeus shows up.
Yeah.
That's the only character where it didn't look garbage because it looked like an actual dog, and B, the voice matched with what they were trying to do.
I will say that's the one voice match.
Yeah.
I would say, because like David Koechner as Phil, who was again Lee Pace in the previous movie, Koechner's voice doesn't work at all.
No.
He doesn't even sound like himself.
Yeah.
I thought
it was a misprint.
Catch him after a party or something, and he's like, oh yeah, I could.
It's like because Koechner's so distinct in his voice that like when you look at the design of Phil, it's like, well, either you made the design of Phil is too young for Koechner's voice, so you probably should have cast it younger, or you should have designed him to look like someone who's around Koechner's age. I don't know what it's this weird clash in the brain where I'm seeing a guy who looks probably around my age, maybe a little younger, and then his voice is David Koechner, who's trying to sound like a younger guy. It's really bad.
And the whole "we'll do it for money" aspect, I was so like, they were adding to a character that didn't. You never address it, that the only reason why you were willing to train Marmaduke was because for the cash.
Yeah.
When technically your biggest draw should be your pool is endless water. Now, the one thing about this movie that had me kind of feeling like smiley is the voice of Guy is Brian Hull.
Mm.
And he's pretty big on social media. He does popular voices very well.
Yeah.
And he recently was in the new Hotel Transylvania. Thank you. Yeah, he was in that.
Yeah, he took over. Yeah. Yeah, he took over for Adam Sandler, which.
Yeah, he's up and coming.
You know,
and so,
he was fine.
Yeah, like, I'm happy that he's getting work because he's an up and coming voice actor and stuff. So he's getting more and more projects. This movie felt more like in his wheelhouse because he's starting and he's just saying yes to everything.
Right. It's funny because you would think Guy Hamill, no offense to Brian Hull, and I'm with you, I've actually been aware of him, and congrats, he's finally he's getting up there. But this does feel like a partner, like, oh, this should have been like the celebrity, no offense, this should have been the celebrity get, right? Like, this should have been this should have gotten like some sort of celebrity actor, and I probably would have cast
him.
This should have been J.K. Simmons. I actually would have put Brian in the voice of Phil. That would have probably matched a little better for the kind of character they wanted. But also, but you can see that Guy Hamilton's supposed to be a little bit more over the top, so Brian probably used one of his, like, kind of, like, okay, I can do this kind of voice thing. So, fair. But, hey, congrats, he's taken over the voice, you know, like, he's gotten a better gig in the form of Hotel Transylvania. But yeah, once again, I don't see him really talking about this one very much.
No, I don't see if anyone in this production goes like, hey, go check out Marmaduke, I'm in it. It's they just got their very first work and they're very happy about it.
Yeah.
That's the only person who's excited about the Marmaduke movie.
Yeah. Because like no one seems to want to definitely say, hey, check out Marmaduke.
Well, okay. So a big thing that I was like, the thing I love the most about the 2010 Marmaduke is that movie was made for kids and there's fun elements and you can see where they made it for kids. Whereas with this movie, it's also made for kids. Kids aren't this, like, there's no way this would be a good babysitter movie. There's nothing about this that screams kids, you're going to enjoy this. This is the current trend. There's nothing in this movie had me thinking, okay, this is what they're going to like.
Yeah, no, if Marmaduke 2010 is definitely like writing low, but at least, hey, fine, it's for kids. This is like, okay, so how can we write lower than that? You know, like, what's the, can we make the bar lower. You know?
I have some things that I want to bring up and see if anyone has an answer to these questions.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So, okay. So, obviously, the structure of this movie makes no sense. But one thing that didn't make any sense to me. So, when we get to the first dog show, the very first one that Marmaduke messes up because he's sabotaged by Zeus.
Mm-hmm.
Why was Guy, the trainer, why was he in disguise?
So, how I took it was he didn't want his name associated because he... Now, bear in mind, I'm looking really deep into this. Yeah. He wanted to have Marmaduke win, and then him, when they go like, oh, and who is this trainer? Him to be like, it is I! And then do a spinny thing. Guy, the world's greatest dog trainer. He was trying to go for the big shock. Because the minute he shows up, instantly everyone knows who he is and there's expectation. So that's, I think that's what they were going for, was big shock. Now, can't stress enough, the movie doesn't tell you this. This is me assuming.
Yeah, my assumption was is that they animated a different character and they went, oh, it's going to be too hard to fix that. Let's just make him say that he's in disguise.
That's, because here's the thing, Cole, that script-wise sounds correct. But for some reason, they didn't animate that. But Andrew, also, you see how this film is animated? I don't see that being wrong either. It's really awkward. Because that's like, I think, okay, joking aside, I actually think it's Cole's answer. That's the intent. But for some reason, they didn't animate that scene.
Well, yeah.
Like, oh, people will know it's me. Because his whole deal is that people think that he's peaked as a dog trainer. So him entering a competition in disguise to prove that I still got it. I made this untrainable dog behave, but I did it without my. But he did it. He disguised himself to kind of prove that he doesn't need that clout. I mean, this is again like Cole. I'm reaching.
Yeah, this is 100%. And unlike the 2010 version where you're like, oh, I'm pretty sure they filmed it and they cut it for time for whatever reason, I think they didn't do it. I think there was nothing left on the cutting floor. I think this movie was so cheaply made, they only edited and read for what they were going to put in.
The other thing that I could not... So, it seems like Guy is going to be a villain, and then he comes around.
Yeah.
And I couldn't make sense of what they were going for there at all.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they bring in Zeus as the villain.
Yeah.
Who, Cole, I want to say, you say that J.K. Simmons, that Zeus looked good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he looked like a crocodile. He had like the scariest mouth I've seen on a dog in my life.
I disagree. I need you to tell me how... the rating of your podcast for language.
I've already said fuck a couple times. You're good.
Marmaduke's mouth does not look... It looks gross. Because it reminded me so much of a woman's body where it's like, that's all I could see was that. And I'm like, there's no way they animated this correctly. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm trying really hard to say this nicely.
I'm gonna let you let that one go, Cole, because I, for the life of me, cannot remember how it looks when Marmaduke talks or moves. My brain won't allow me to. I will just take your word for it that it looks, you know, bad in a very specific way.
Yeah, basically, it's almost like they drew. Yeah. Oh my God. I can hear people going like, "What's Cole talking about?" Because I can feel like I just. all I can see was that, and I was like, oh, there's no way. Like, my brain's in the gutter. There's no way I'm seeing this correctly. There's no way that it's this. But yeah, I'm getting self-conscious now. Oh my God.
So J.K. Simmons was doing a very strange voice for Zeus. It was basically my theory was that people realized, people acting in this film, who were bigger, the bigger names at least, realized that it wasn't good. And their only way to save themselves was to do a weird voice so they wouldn't be recognized. So every single person is, I mean, Pete Davidson might have just been talking. That's all that he did. That was his way of disguising it. But J.K. Simmons was doing kind of a, putting on some accent that I've never heard J.K. Simmons use, some kind of vocal inflection, which I was just like, I know that that's J.K. Simmons, but I've never heard him speak like this ever before. But okay, yeah. So this thing about the, this movie, the new thing that it introduces is this trainer, because the family dynamic, everything else is pretty much the same that we had seen in the 2010 one. It's the, you know, the dog is big trouble. This trainer guy, he has this thing later where he like is in love with one of the judges at the World Dog Contest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the movie never says that except that he like asks her out. It was just very strange. Okay, wait. And then my third. Okay, this is it's all about the trainer now. This is Guy Hilton hour. this character is so bizarre. The other thing that I couldn't. Okay, connecting him to Zeus, right? Mm-hmm. As the weird. I was like, are they both villains? Is there going to be a connection there? What's the deal? Guy has the trophies from the last six World Dog Shows. He's the major winner. He's the guy. Zeus says that he always wins the dog shows. He's always the winner. No one else can win because it's him.
Those don't go together.
Zeus is lying? Or did Guy train Zeus and they didn't? They were like, oh, we forgot to write that part in?
So how I took it was Guy always won. Then he stopped. And the minute he stopped, Zeus always won.
But then if we follow the twist ending, Zeus was cheating anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So was Zeus always cheating? And this is just the Marmaduke was somehow, he had that little, what was that? Jimmy Neutron brain explosion moment where he realized that it was the same person.
Like, I know that voice. Well, yeah. The one thing that surprised me was they emphasized the judge only giving ones. And then cheering for when Zeus was on stage. And I know it's a kid's movie, and I may be looking too hard into this. But wouldn't the other judges start questioning the integrity of that one judge?
Probably. Yeah.
Like, there are so many red flags about this judge. Let alone them trying to be like, oh no, see, it's passing because, you know, it's a disguise. It's like, but it's a one, it's a frowny face, it's a disinterested for every other dog. And then a standing ovation cheer. Like, no, this wasn't even hidden well. This was not a reveal. This was the worst executed plan ever.
Now, the other big thing in this movie is the kung fu spirit hand.
Yeah. Thing. All right.
What the fuck was that?
Like, I was going to, like, at first I thought it was really racist at first.
And then they got really racist later on.
And then they got really racist later yeah. on, mm-hmm. but then I'm weirdly conflicted because I see that a Chinese production company is part of this. And I'm like, did you guys approve of this? Or did you not care?
Was it like double racism? Like, it was racist, but then the people who produced it were like, Americans are racist, make something racist. Like, was like, what? That whole backwards hat glasses thing, I was like, what is happening?
I just got questions upon questions. And again, I'm like, what is this? Real thing. It's like, what is this? What am I watching right now?
Justin,
why are you doing this? You know?
Watching the actual Asian dog show up and have the sing with the swords with the trainer and then they start rapping, that felt like the most boomer edited thing of like, oh, kids like this, so we're going to have this dog do that. This is how we attract our younger audiences. That's what it felt like to me. Like, this grandpa or this out-of-touch uncle doing their best. And an uncle would be more, I guess, Gen X. But you know what I'm talking about? Like, Gen X or boomer level of badly produced trying to connect to kids who would probably also watch this going, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big trying too hard vibe in in this and arguably the entire film. I think that's kind of generally a lot of my feelings at this on this movie after a while. It's like I'm just going, what's happening right now? Like, why are we going through half the stuff that I'm seeing at this moment? So we talk about a little bit in the 2010 film that there looks like a moment that like maybe Marmaduke died.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why did that happen again?
and more dramatically.
Right?
Like in a really weird way where it's like a completely unearned, you know, eulogy that Phil gives for Marmaduke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he just gets up.
Well, because it was poorly animated. Like, I don't think they would know how to limp. The best animated moment was, unfortunately, the flatulence scene where he's like this giant whale, like just like running across the grass trying to get to the bathroom. That was the only quote unquote cartoon edited moment. Everything else was just cheaply done.
I don't know. The other weird thing that this has this is a connection to the 2010 one, is that in the 2010 one, at the end, he goes viral, right? A video of Marmaduke goes viral.
Yeah.
That's the beginning of this movie.
Yeah.
Is the somehow Marmaduke jumping into a pool and causing it to explode with an ocean's amount of water.
Mm-hmm.
Goes viral.
I didn't even
and that's,
realize.
That's how Guy Hamilton, or Guy Hilton, whatever his name is, he finds Marvel.
Yeah, I didn't even realize. I didn't even think of that.
Well, the worst
is
the...
I didn't think of that. I hate this.
Well, the explaining the plot, because I think they thought their audience was going to be three-year-olds or something, because they're like, hey, Guy Trainer, you are looking for this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, so we're not even going to do story. We're just blatantly saying... It's like how when they're pitching the movie, they're like, okay, so we're going to have Guy Trainer sitting on his couch, and the news reporter is going to be saying this is an untrainable dog, and he's going to be like, oh, this is what I want. And instead of changing that pitch to dialogue, they just took the pitch and they made it dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
You're like,
mm-hmm.
No! There is...
I don't... Yeah, I want to say something that the 2010 movie at least understands that this movie doesn't. At some point, I think in this movie, they forgot that the humans aren't supposed to understand Marmaduke's dialogue.
That confused me.
The 2010 movie never make that mistake. In this one, there's a part where Marmaduke goes to the trainer's door to kind of ask him to take him back after he screwed up so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wait, how would... The trainer opens the door and just instantly is like, oh, you're here to ask me back. It's like, what is going on? What the hell?
And then Marmaduke, the thing that confused me the most was when Marmaduke's like, I will prove I'm ready. Then goes around the world and I'm like, oh, this is like symbolic. He's not really doing this. This is symbolic.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, no, we're being literal. He literally went around the world in a day? I don't know, long enough, fast enough that it was before the competition ended, but that, I think that would make, like, any championship worth a note irrelevant, because this dog went around the world, and oh my god, speaking of, the animation of showing him on the map, I would have preferred that animation to this shit.
That was the same animation style of any still picture that was hanging on a wall. And I was like, why would they do that? Why would they do differently animated still photos?
Yeah.
I was just going to bitch about something else.
I'll say, like, it felt almost like someone wanted to make the movie that style. And they're like, no, we're doing this animation because this is what kids want to see. And they go, no, kids want to see good animation. Like, no, we're doing 3D. So that one animator said, fuck you, I'm drawing this anyway. And then put that in the movie regardless of the situation. Plus, that animation made the humans look realistic. This, I don't know who saw a human and thought, yes, we're going to do triangles and circles.
To put it, as bluntly as possible, the mom in this has Pixar mom syndrome.
But, yeah. Like, ridiculous. Like, not even...
Like, in a way that's not even... Like, Pixar moms are, like, believable. This is just, like, scary.
Yeah.
They reused some background people in some scenes where I was like, that doesn't... There was a character walking into the into the dog competition who shows up in the background of the one high school scene. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that doesn't make any goddamn sense.
No.
That's like an old lady just wandering down the high school hall.
Andrew, you brought up a great point. Watching the background stuff was kind of what got me through this movie. Got me through this movie because there's this part where Marmaduke does something where they all have to run. I forget if it's the pooping. I think it's the pooping moment with the green smoke everywhere.
Yeah.
But there's someone running for their life who gets hit by a car. And the guy gets back up, and then another car hits him so hard that he's now like a bug on the windshield being dragged away. And I'm just watching this going, did someone not think they were paying attention to what's happening? Because that dude is dead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. For the amount of cartoon violence that occurs in this film, all it takes is, like, a bunch of shampoo bottles landing on the trainer for him to be completely unable to finish the competition.
Yeah. Which I wasn't expecting.
It didn't make any sense.
Like, what?
Cole, you need to... It didn't make any sense.
Like, for a full body cast of... I'm like, you could have done so much worse. You could have done anything.
There is one thing that this, let's bring it back to Marmaduke Prime, Marmaduke from the comics. There's one thing that this movie does get right, that the 2010 just went off on its own little journey. The cat is named King Tut. And that's what the cat is named in the comic strip.
Okay.
It's not Carlos like in the 2010 one.
Well, I think if you would have had George Lopez play a character named King Tut, it would be weird.
Well, you know what? It would be, for sure, it would be nothing new.
Please rate and review Nothing New, a remake podcast, on your podcast app.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Nothing New Pod.
You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/nothingnew.
Nothing New, a remake podcast, is part of the Benview Network.
This podcast is a part of the Benview Network.
You can find this and other podcasts like it at benviewnetwork.com.